Okay, today's daf is daf Lamed Dalet, a very interesting daf, particularly for women, all about mitzvot aseh shazman grama, what nashim are chayavot, what they're p'turot for. Okay, we're going to finish up the sugya about the zaken slash chacham. On daf Lamed Gimel, we're going to start from Ibayelahu, the second wide line. A few announcements before we start. I won't be teaching starting Monday for 2 weeks. I'll start up again on the following Monday. And I just want to remind people listening online that you can find it on the website. You can also find it on iTunes. And if anybody wants to write a review on iTunes, that would be great, just to get it more known and higher ranked. So you can go into iTunes. There's an option to review it. Okay. We'll read our refuah shlemo. The Dvar Batinos, Avram Shimon ben Chana, Carmela ben Imo, Orli Pnina bat Racha, Frida Chaya Malka, Esther bat Zipporah, Daniel ben Mem Chaya Rut, Yosef ben Rachel, Leah bat Rivka, Val Yoshua Falek ben Bracha Bata, Yael Mir bat Chaya, Rina Chaya bat Shoshana, Yaakov ben Rosa, Talia Racha bat Tamar Sarah, Leiloi Nishma Chana bat Tatar Reza bat Sarah, Tzvi Hirsch ben Yaakov, Halevi Umela. Okay, our question now is, Ibayelahu, we're going to start the second white line on Lama Gimel Lama Bet, Rachuv Kimehalech Dame Olo. If somebody's walking a zaken or a chacham, so you have to get up before him. But if he's sitting, then you don't. So let's say he's riding. Is that considered like it's mehalech? Okay, so if your rav comes riding on a donkey past you, or riding maybe in a car, do you have to get up? Amar Bai, Tashma, let's learn it from this sugya, which has nothing to do with this, but it has to do with something sitting and something sitting on something that's moving. Okay, in other words, we have the chacham sitting on a donkey that's moving, and now we're going to compare it to another case. Tameh yoshev tachat ha'ilan, v'tahor omed, tameh. If the tameh is sitting under a tree, and a tahor person is standing up under the tree, and the tree creates a type of ohel. So now what do we say? The tahur who's standing becomes tameh because it goes by the person who's sitting. But if the tameh omeh tachat ha'ilam, the tahur yoshev, then if the tahur is the one sitting, then he stays tahur. Okay, so it goes by if you're sitting or not. So now, v'im yeshev hatameh, hatahur tameh. Now this, if he was standing and then he sits down, so the tahur becomes tameh. V'chein ve'evan ha-menugat. And the same thing is true with an evan from a house that was a menuga. Okay, Parshat Shavua. V'amar of Nachum bar Kohen, zot omeret rachuv k'mahalech dami. That is, it's the same thing if you have, the case is that the evan, right, if somebody's holding this evan menugat, so the whole thing we have was if the tahor is sitting or the tahor is standing. Right? Sorry, really the tameh. If the tameh is sitting, then it's going to go by him. Now, let's say the tameh is sitting and has an evan menugat on his lap. So we're going to say that, again, it depends whether the guy is standing or sitting. So what do you see here? The evan goes by the person holding him. So likewise, the chacham goes by the animal that's riding. So if the animal is moving and he's on the animal, then he's considered moving. And then you have to stand for him. So Shma Mina. That's what we will learn from here. Okay, next question. Ibayelahu, ma'ula mo mipnei sefer Torah. Do you have to stand up for a sefer Torah, right? Now, we all know you have to do this, but it wasn't so clear in the Gemara. Rabbi Chilkia, Rabbi Simon, ve Rabbi Elazar amru, kavachomer mipnei lomdeom dim mipane lo kol sheken. In other words, if we're going to stand up before people who learn Torah, then obviously the Torah itself we're going to stand up for. Just to point out, there's a sugya in Makot, which seems to indicate the opposite. That there's a certain respect you would have for human beings over the Torah itself, right? So you can make the argument in both ways. This argument is made obviously in the direction that we do stand for the Sefer Torah. Rabbi Elad, Rabbi Yaakov Brazavdi, Havayatve, they were sitting. Okay, presumably we're going to see now they were learning Torah. Chalifa Azar, Rabbi Shimon Bar Abba, Vekamu Mikameh. Okay, as opposed to all the other stories where the rabbi came and they didn't stand up and the rabbi got angry, here we're going to have the exact opposite. Okay, which again is going to feed into what we were talking about before about the fact that the sugyot indicate all different things. And what we mentioned in the beginning is they don't really talk about the hierarchy exactly, who's supposed to stand for who. Here it comes up, here it's mentioned. So Rav Shimon bar Abba walks by, and while they're learning, Rabbi Eli and Rabbi Yaakov bar Savdi get up and stand up before him. Amar lehu, he says to them, Chada da'atum chakime va'ana chaver. You guys are talmidei chachamim, and I'm just a chaver. In other words, I learn, but you're obviously more knowledgeable than I am, so why did you stand up for me? Ve'od klum Torah umedet mifnei lomdeha. In other words, should you stand up in respect for a talmid chacham when you're already sitting learning Torah? If you're sitting and learning Torah, you don't need to stand up. You shouldn't interrupt your Torah learning for a rabbi. So Savar la ki Rabbi Elazar, Damar Rabbi Elazar, ein tamid chacham, rashai la'amod mipnei rabo b'sha'a she'osek b'Torah. So they're saying he obviously holds that no one should stand up for someone else while they're, you know, even a talmid for his rav while he's in the middle of learning. Okay, so what do you see from the story, right? Hold on for 1 minute. But we're going to see right now, it seems very clear, at least according to Rav Shimon bar Abba. Number one, you can see that this issue of hierarchy, they obviously thought that he was bigger than them in Torah. And he said, I'm not bigger than you in Torah. You guys are bigger than me. So you can see how there would be confusion as to who's supposed to stand for who, because it's not exactly something you can measure, how much of a Talmid Chacham is a certain person. So that's number one. Number two, we see this issue that while you're learning Torah, you shouldn't stand up. It's sort of like we saw about the Baalei Melacha. While they're doing their Melacha, they don't need to stand up for other people. So now, what happens? Layit ala Abaye. Abaye cursed him. Okay, in other words, Abaye felt very strongly the other way. Now we see, as usual, that there's different opinions here. According to Rabbi Shimon bar Abba, you shouldn't stand up while you're sitting and learning Torah. And Abaye thought Dafka the opposite. No, if your Rav walks by while you're learning Torah, of course you're supposed to stand up out of respect for him. So we see these two opposite approaches, and obviously you can see he felt very strongly about it if he curses him because of it. That's a very strong Lashon. He obviously believed very strongly in it. Okay, now we're going to have our last sugya about this. V'hibitu acharei Moshe abo ha'ohela. Okay, there's two different translations of this pasuk. Okay, it seems the people looked after Moshe until he got to the Ohel. Okay, this is from Shmot Lama Gimel. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha. Chad amar l'gnai v'chad amar l'shevach. One said this was a negative thing that they were looking after him, and one said it was a positive thing. Okay, this is going to be interesting. Man damar l'gnai k'di'ita. The one who said it was a negative thing, like it said. Okay, they don't want to tell you. Okay? Usually when we have this, it's referring to like the Hadamaran, like we just said. Okay? But this doesn't say it just, right? We didn't talk about this at all recently. So, but what seems to be is that they don't want to really talk about the Gnai of Moshe, so they don't mention it. Okay? It's like when they, you know, they say God doesn't like the Son of Yisrael when they really mean Yisrael or something, right? They don't want to say. So here they don't want to say the words about what it was that they did to Moshe. Okay? Apparently if you look up, it comes up in a sugya somewhere else, and what they said was that Moshe is, you know, fat and all these things, and he's basically using our money. Okay, this is typical extortion or bribery, or, well, not really bribery, but in other words, all those, the things of, the issue of the leaders taking money, public money, and using it for their own personal consumption. So some people say that that's what they were saying about him. V'chan amar l'shevach. Manda amar l'shevach, amar chizkia, amar li rabbi chanina, bered rabbi abau. Okay, a whole long list of who said this. Chacham over omei milifanav dalet amot. Okay, if a chacham passes by within dalet amot, you have to stand for him. Bekevan shamar avar dalet amot yoshev. Once he passes out of your four amot, you can sit down. Av beitin over. Now we're going to see again this hierarchy. If an av beitin passes by omei milifanav melo enav. Okay, we saw this before with the rabbi muvhak. Right, his particular rabbi. Now we're seeing the same terms of Meloi Nav by somebody else, which is the Abbeitim. V'kevan shavar dalet amot yoshev. Okay, once he passes by, it's from when you see him far away, you have to stand up, but once he passes by your dalet amot, then you can sit down. Nasi over melifanav, Meloi Nav, ve'eno yoshev ad sheyashev bimkomo. You have to stand up until he gets to his spot and sits down for the Nasi. Where do they learn this from? Shene'emar, v'bitu acharei Moshe, abo'o ha'ohela. Right? It almost sounds like when you say goodbye to someone and you leave them, right? If you just turn right away, so that's not as respectful as if you keep watching them until they're already out of sight. So that's kind of what they're saying about Moshe, that they waited until he got to the ohel and kind of to his place. So therefore, the Nasi has to get to his place. Okay, end of the sugya about zkenim. Now we're going to start the sugya of mitzvah aseh shazman grama, continuing along in the Mishnah. from Kaftet. Kol mitzvot aseh shazman grama. So it was what happens? Nashim, right? Anashim chayavim v'nashim p'tuchot. Tanu Rabbanan. Now we're going to have a braita that starts to tell us ezehu mitzvat aseh shazman grama. Which ones are mitzvat aseh shazman grama? Sukkah, v'lulav, shofar, v'tzitzit, u'tfilin. Okay, so let's just talk about each one of these. Sukkah, because it's specifically during 7 days of the year. Right? You have to wonder, what is zman grama? Does it mean a certain point in the day? Does it mean a certain point in time, a certain day of the year? Okay, so now we're going to see if it's 7 days and not any other days. So that makes it zman grama. Lulav, same thing. Shofar, particularly Rosh Hashanah. Tzitzit, okay, so now tzitzit is a little complicated. Because tzitzit, so if you look at Tosfot, he says, the first Tosfot on Lamed Daled, Af agav dekaim alam b'hakom etz rabba mesechem enachot, delayla zman tfilin, v'halacha ve'im morin ken. Okay, so first of all, he's going to talk about tfilin, that you could also wear tfilin at night. Sorry, he's particularly talking about the tfilin. With the tzitzit, there's this whole, right, he also says, right, if you look later on, he says in Tosfot basically that there's a whole machloka whether laila is man tzitzit or not, whether you could wear tzitzit at night, whether you it has to do with the beged, if it's a ksut laila, like they talk about that you don't need tzitzit on your sheets because you wear them at night. It's ksut laila. So is it a din in the beged? Is it a din in the adam? There's a whole different debate about it, but basically they say it seems to be that tzitzit for the main part is something you do during the day and not at night, and that already makes it zman grama, which you would think. If you could do something at any point during the day, right, it shouldn't necessarily be zman grama. But that's what they, again, they're, we're going to talk about this klal and why specifically zman grama relates to this. But that seems to be what they think about tzitzit. And tefillin also, like even though Tosfot says laila could be zman for tefillin, they also say that, right, tefillin is mostly done during the day and not at night. So that's one reason. And another reason that Tosfot gives based on that issue about the really Mi'ikara din laila is man tefillin. You could wear it. The issue is that you don't do it on Shabbatot and Yamim Tovim. So now that's a real extension of zman grama. It means you can do it every day of the year except for Shabbat and Chag. That already means it's time bound because there's certain days of the year where you can't do it as opposed to, right, Sukkah, which is only certain days of the year you can do it. This becomes, well, since there's certain days of the year you can't do it, that already makes it zman grama. Seems to be stretching of this klal, but we'll talk about this. We'll get back to it soon. Mezuzah, okay, putting up a mezuzah on your house, tzachiv all the time. Ma'akeh, you need to have a railing on your roof so nobody falls off. Aveda, to be meshiv aveda, which also isn't time bound. Shiloh haken, okay, also not time bound, having to send away the mother bird. Okay, uklalahu. Oh, sorry, stop there. Okay, shiloh haken. That's the end of this braita. So now, again, I want to get back to this topic of zman grama, but I want to see first what the Gemara does, and then we're going to come back and talk about it. So the first thing the Gemara says is, uklalahu? Is this really a klal? Is this true? Because we're going to see that there's a lot of exceptions to the rule. Okay, what are the exceptions? Hare matzah. Okay, women are chayavot to eat matzah. Okay, relevant to next week. We're chayavot, and matzah is clearly mitzvah aseh shazman grama. Right? It's only certain days of the year. In fact, the real mitzvah is only even one day. V'simcha, okay, simchat haregel, also, nashim are chayavot in simchat haregel, and this comes because the pasuk says, v'samachta ata u'beitecha, beitecha is your house, it says, bincha u'beitecha, and we'll see in a minute, it even says, the ger yatom an almana, so an almana also. Okay, so all sorts of women are chayavot in simcha. Hakel, okay, we're women of Chayavot, right? At the end of the, after the Shemitah year, you're supposed to get together, read the Torah in a public forum, and it says in the Torah, the Nashim, the Anashim, Nashim V'tach, and the children, so also, and these are mitzvot aseh shazman grama v'nashim Chayavot. Okay, so how could you say that this is the rule? V'tu, and now, not only are there mitzvot aseh shazman grama that Nashim are Chayavot, but there's also mitzvot aseh Shaloa's man grama, right, that are not time-bound, and we know that women are pturot from them, okay? Hare Talmud Torah, women are not chayavot to learn Torah. Piryahu Rivya, having children, okay, there's a machloket about this, about whether they're chayavot or not. Upidyon Ben, okay? And Pidyon Ben, we are also, isn't time-bound. Now, you're supposed to do it on the 30th day, but you could do it any time after that. So therefore, they say it's not time-bound.
A woman doesn't do it no matter what.
Right, so that's what they're saying here. Delav mitzvot aseh shazman gramahu v'nashim pturot. These are not time-bound mitzvot, and yet they're exempt. So here the Mishnah built this very clear klal, okay, which we all know, we all talk about that. Women are exempt from time-bound mitzvot. And the first thing the Gemara says is, but wait a minute, there's mitzvot aseh shazman grama, that women, there's, you know, time-bound mitzvot that women are chayavot. And on the flip side, there's non-time-bound mitzvot that women are not chayavot. So what's the deal with this klal? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein limidim min haklalot va'afilu b'makom she'ne'amar bo chutz. What does this mean? There's exceptions to every rule, is basically what he's saying. He's saying you can't learn from a klal just because, this is an interesting approach, just because the Mishnah gives it a general rule doesn't mean that you can infer from here everything and assume that there's no exceptions. Even if it says, except for this, you can still say there's more exceptions, because you might think that if somebody says, except for this, this all goes back to that whole Tana v'Shiur that we have. If they leave out one case, then they have to leave out more than one. So now they're saying, it's not exactly the same thing as that, but it's similar. They're saying, even if it says, except for this, still there could be more exceptions. So now he's going to give an example. It's not going to just stop say it, but he's going to prove it. Ditnan, this has nothing to do with our topic. Bakol ma'arvin u'mishtatvim. When you do an Erev Chatzerot, or a Shituf Mivo'ot, where you get a group of people together so that you can carry within that space, and you put some food down, it says you can use any kind of food, chutz min hamayim u'melach, except for water and salt, because water and salt are not considered food. Okay? So now they say, v'tuleika, is there really nothing else that's an exception that you can't use? V'hayikak mehinu pitriot. There's mushrooms and truffles, you know, those other types of mushrooms. There's all mushrooms we talked about. We've seen this before, where you don't say a borei pri adama on them because they're not really things that grow from the ground. They're just growths, so to speak, and they're not really considered food, and therefore you can't use them for an eruv. And here it says you can't do it except for water and salt. And yet, kmehin pitriot, you also can. So here you see his point. Ela ein lemedim na klalot afilu mukom shenemar bochutz. Okay. So therefore, what he's basically saying is every rule is meant to be broken. There's exceptions to every rule. And he's in other words, what he's really saying is, don't take this categorization of the Mishnah so seriously. Okay?
It seems a little weak, because I feel like a lot of what we've learned along the way is being able to either extract from the small to the general or the opposite.
Okay. So what Ani, you're pointing out is that, and that's what I want to lead to now, I want to go off the dot for a minute and just talk about this, which is, when we, in general, the Mishnah and the Gemara, they try to put rules, and rules so that you can learn from them and derive from them other cases. So now, that's really the question. Is this meant to be a rule that we could derive from it all other things, or is it not? Or does the Mishnah have a different goal? So I'm going to give you a bunch of positions, which some of them I'm sure you're familiar with, about why women are exempt from time-bound mitzvot. Okay, now the first number of perushim we're going to see basically take it that the Mishnah here is giving a generalization, a klal. Now, yes, there might be exceptions to the rule, but it works as a general klal that women are p'turah from mitzvot aseh shazman grama. And there's a reason, right? What's the reason that women are p'turah from mitzvot aseh shazman grama? So first of all, I want to point out that the first person who addresses this head-on as to why women are p'turot is the Avudraham, living in Spain in the 14th century. He's the first guy who starts to talk about why women are exempt from time-bound mitzvot. And what does he say? He says, "Hatam shediftaru anashim mitzvot aseh shazman grama." Okay, lefi sha'isha meshuabedet lebala latzot rachav. She has a commitment to her husband. She's subjugated to him to do all of his needs. In other words, she's going to end up in a catch-22. If something comes into conflict, she's supposed to do a mitzvah and she's supposed to do what her husband says. If she does the mitzvah, so oila mi bala. And if she does what her husband says, oila mi bara. So basically, you know, from Hashem. So basically, we're going to say she's p'turah in order kedei liot la'shalom im ba'ala. For shalom ba'ala purposes, we want to make a nice relationship. If her husband says she's supposed to do something, she's supposed to do it. Okay? By the way, if you go in this shita, just like we talked about before with the kibud ava'im, when it comes into conflict, then, before I even get to that, I want to point out that this is very much like the eved, right? The Eved, also, the Eved Kenani is patur from mitzvot haseh shasman grama, would be the same reason, basically, because he's also subjugated to his adon. If you take this as the reason, then you have to raise questions about, well, nowadays, that we don't view women as subjugated to their husbands, maybe women shouldn't be exempt from time-bound mitzvot. Okay, so it's something to raise, it's a question. Okay, the next one we're going to see is Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, who lived in Germany in the 19th century. He writes, in the 1800s. Okay. Ki ein hen zikukot lahem. He has what we call the apologetic approach, that women don't need them. Share what's the point of mitzvot asei shazman grama? Now he has a different thing. What's unique about time-bound mitzvot? Hem mevat'ot amitut machshavot ekronot v'achlatot al yedei ma'asim simliim. It's a symbolic acts that basically are supposed to affect your machshavot, your decisions, all sorts of things. V'hem mechadshot arachim elu miperek leperek. They come at intervals at certain times to constantly be reminding you of what you're supposed to be thinking. That she's very much focused and she knows her goals and she doesn't need these outside things. And then he says, "Ki ha'ish ta'un zeruz chozer." A man needs it much more so. Okay? Again, a very, you can argue with this, whether this is true or not, and, is a very good question. Okay. The third one I'm going to bring is Rav Moshe Feinstein, America 20th century. He says, "Ki stam nashim ba'olam einan ashirot." Most women aren't rich. "Valehem utal gidul ha'yiladim v'ha'yiladot shehim alecha yoter chashuva la'Hashem yitbarach v'atorah." Her responsibility, not to her husband. She's not subjugated to her husband. He doesn't see that. But what does he say, right? Which makes sense in America in the 20th century, right? The few women is subjugated to their husband. But what does he say? Women are responsible for the children. He brings an example from animals, that the nekevot are always the ones who bring up the children. Okay, men are no different from that. And that's why they're not chayvot in mitzvot aseh shazman grama. Okay, another argument that you could argue, what if you have a house where the father takes on all the responsibilities of child rearing, right? Where there are families like that. So would you say that he's patur from mitzvot aseh shazman grama, not the women? Right? Obviously, all these answers have problems in them, or questions, or things, how relevant are they nowadays? So according to this, what if you're wealthy and you have people who take care of your kids and you're not as responsible for your children? So does that mean, forget about whether it's true or not. If you have money, does that mean you're not taking care of the children and you have other people? It raises all sorts of questions. The last approach I want to bring is the approach of the more academic approach, which is to say that it's possible that when they gave this klal, they didn't mean, and I really think that the sugya indicates this, which is that they took a bunch of mitzvot, they saw women, like they knew women were chayavot in these, and they knew women were pturot from other ones, and they tried to put a title to it. They tried to say, what's similar about all these things, and what's different about these two categories? And they gave a klal that kind of, right, they took the list that they had, let's say, sukkah, lulav, shofar, tzitzit, and tefillin, and they said, what's the common denominator? It's that they're time-bound, so let's just give it a title and say that they're exempt from time-bound mitzvot. But obviously there's exceptions because they took the examples and they made a rule out of it, but there's obviously exceptions because not everything fits into this rule. And that it could be that it was just a way, and if you talk about what Ani asked about the type of, the style of the Mishnah, on the one hand, it's to give us rules so that we can keep them and apply them. But also, it's to categorize things so that we have a category to put into a box. So they took what existed and they stuck it into a box and they said, oh, this fits into mitzvot aseh shazman grama, that fits into mitzvot aseh shazman grama, not necessarily having any connection to the fact that it's time-bound. So that's another approach of how to look at it, which explains to me, it explains a lot of things. It explains, if you think about it, when we're going to see, the sugya gets even more called, they start raising all sorts of questions. Why didn't we learn it from here? Why didn't we learn from there the opposite? And why didn't we learn? And they start going all in a circuitous route trying to say, why is it that this ended up here and that ended up there in that category, and why didn't we learn this one from there, and why don't we learn? And it's almost like they're trying to say, I don't understand this whole categorization, when in the end there really is no categorization. That might be the best answer. That they weren't trying to put in a category, they were just trying to put in a category so you remember. If you think about it, remember, they memorized the Mishnayot by heart. So they wanted a mnemonic device to remember. So they said, if we stick it in this category, you'll remember then which things fall into that category and which things don't. Okay, the other question I want to raise about this, which I'm not going to get into because we don't have a lot of time for this, but it's also a very interesting thing that comes off of this, which is if you look at that category of sukkah, lulav, shofar, tzitzit, and tefillin. So the next jump to make is, well, can women do these if they want to? Can they opt in? And when you look at that, you can already know your answer based on what's the nohag, right? So sukkah, yes. Lulav, yes. Shofar, yes. Tzitzit and tefillin, right? Much more questionable, right? Many more people siding to say no. And the question is, why is that the case? And if you look at all the sources, you'll see that throughout history, there were women who wore tzitzit, there were women who wore tefillin, there were women who didn't do sukkah. It depended on where you were living, that affected which women were taking on which mitzvot. And you can try to theorize about why women did certain mitzvot and not others, and you could say maybe sukkah, lulav, and shofar are more done in a community forum rather than individually, where tzitzit and tefillin are more individual, maybe you could say, although tefillin is in shul. Anyway, you can try to make theories about why that is, but I think a lot of it has to do with what the women in whatever generation were interested in doing, and therefore the reaction of the rabbis to this, whether they supported it or whether they didn't support it. And there's a whole machloket Sephardim and Ashkenazim, whether women can actually say a bracha when they do it, because they're not commanded, so how could they say a bracha? So Ashkenazim say they can, Sephardim say they can't. Again, a lot of that probably is historical, because Sephardim probably didn't have a lot of women who were trying to do mitzvot because they lived in Muslim countries and women weren't so motivated to do things in general, whereas in Ashkenazi countries where there was Christian influence and Christians in the Middle Ages were very much taking upon, women were taking a more central role there. There's all sorts of sources that indicate this, and the Ashkenazi women also were doing it. There's two theories. One is that it was effects of the Christian. Avram Grossman writes about this, and another thing he claims is that it was effects also of the wealth that they were getting. In the Middle Ages in Ashkenaz, women were you know, things financially were getting better for people, and because of that, women had money, and they viewed themselves in a different place in society than they did earlier, and that made them want to be a part of things more so. So he has a whole theory about it. He has a book, Hasidot u'Mordot, I think it's called. Anyway, it's a very good book, recommended. He has a whole section on this if anybody wants to read it. Okay, we're going to go on now. So now we're going to have a long slew of these questions, raising issues on this klal, and where do we learn it from, etc. So mitzvah aseh shazman gram anashim p'turot. Minalan, where do we learn this from? What's the first source that we learn this from? Gamar mitfilin. They learn it from tefillin, okay? Tefillin is bonet av. We've learned this before, right? If you have one case. So we're going to say, this teaches you to all other cases. If you remember, and we're going to see this later, if you have two things that teach the same thing, then already we say, at least according to some opinions, that it's called shnei ktuvim habeim ke'echad. If you have two things, if you have one thing, then it teaches you to everything else that's like it. If you have two things, or there's a machloka, whether it's two or three, then we already say, if the Torah stressed it in each two cases, then it must mean it's just these two cases and nothing else, and therefore ein melamdim. So keep that in mind. So the first thing they say is we're going to learn it from tefillin. Ma tefillin nashim p'turot, av kol mitzvot aseh shazman grama nashim p'turot. By the way, they don't tell you, how do you know nashim are p'turot from tefillin? So they're going to tell you right now. So first they're going to say, we know the tefillin, we don't know yet why, we know the tefillin nashim are p'turot, so we're going to say, just like tefillin is a mitzvot aseh shazman grama nashim are p'turot, we're going to learn from here to all other mitzvot aseh shazman grama shanashim are p'turot. So now they say, tefillin, where do we learn it from? Gamar la mitalmud Torah. Interestingly enough, they learn it from something that's not as man grammar, right? So, Talmud Torah. Ma Talmud Torah nashim p'turot, af tefillin nashim p'turot. Now, how do we learn Talmud Torah? Because it says, v'limadtem otam et b'neichem, right? And not b'notechem. We saw that the other day. So since nashim are out of Talmud Torah, and tefillin is right next to Talmud Torah in Kriyat Shema, right? We have right, and then we have Ukshartem La'ot Al Yadecha V'Yulutat Po Beninecha, both in the first paragraph of Shema and the second paragraph, they're next to each other. So we learn a Hekesh. So now they say, V'nakish tefillin le'mezuzah. If we're going to take a hekesh from the psukim of Kriyat Shema, why don't we say the tefillin? Right? What do we say in the first paragraph of Shema? K'shartem lo'ot ayedecha v'yuzot v'bedeinecha uchtavtam al mezuzot beitecha v'sharecha. So why don't we learn from there to mezuzah, which we said, the mezuzah nashim or chayavot. So what are the answer? Tefillin le'tamud Torah itkish b'en b'parasha rishonah b'en b'parasha shniyah. Right? In both sections of Shema, there's a hekesh. If you notice, right, the psukim are a different order, right? If you have A, B, C, right, it becomes B, C, right, B, A, C, right? It's the opposite order. So tefillin is not next to mezuzah. I'm sorry, right, tefillin is not next to mezuzah in the second paragraph of Shema, okay? So because Talmud Torah comes in the middle, but it's next to it. Tefillin is next to Talmud Torah in both. So now what do we say? V'nakish, why don't we suggest something else then? Nakish mezuzah l'tamud Torah. If we're going to say the tefillin, we're makish to Talmud Torah to learn the Nashim Pturot, why don't we say mezuzah also is next to Talmud Torah, and therefore maybe Nashim should be Pturot mi mezuzah. So here's a really interesting answer, okay? And you have to really question what they're trying to say here. Lo salkadatach dichtiv limran yirbu yimechem, right? What's the pasuk right after uchtavtam v'zabetecha v'sharecha? Limran yirbu yimechem. It will give you long life. Gavrei ba'echaye, nashe lo ba'echaye. What, you think women don't need longevity? Women also do, and therefore they should do the mitzvah of mezuzah because it will give them long life. Okay, now you have to question, and some of the mefreshim raise this question, what about Talmud Torah? It says, ki hi chayecha ba'orech yamecha. Okay, it's supposed to give you long life also. So why don't you say that women are chayavot in Talmud Torah if you're going to say that? So it's a very tricky answer because you could take this in general. Sechar mitzvot gives you lots of things, and we already said that if you're not mitzvah v'oseh, then you don't get as much sechar. So don't you think nashim need the sechar also? So it's a very strange answer that the Gemara gives here because it raises a lot of questions. By the way, the other place where it uses something similar is by tefillah, where they recommend, they suggest, in Brachot Daf Kaf, they suggest maybe Nashim should be pturot from tefillah, because it's a mitzvah d'aseh shazman grama, and they say no, because Nashim by rachamei. They also need to pray for rachamim to God. They need that also. So it's very strange that they'll say women need this, but they don't need other things, right? Especially, the most obvious one would really be Talmud Torah. You would think that women need Talmud Torah, as it's the basis of everything, and it helps you understand things, and it's such an important mitzvah in terms of sechar. So it's strange that they, you know, what I really think about all this whole sugya is that it seems to be very arbitrary. And I think it's not arbitrary at all. It's just that they're using, what motivated them to say things based on what they saw. Women were doing, women weren't doing. So they use their typical question-answer format to try to, when they already knew the answers to begin with. So they're using it. Right, they knew the facts of women are chayavot and mezuzah, they're p'turah from Talmud Torah, they're p'turah from tefillin, so let's learn these the way we want to. Let's give the answers just so it comes out to the right answer, basically, to this conclusion. What? Right, exactly. They know what they want to get to in this sugya. They know exactly where it's not asking questions for the sake of let's maybe come to a different conclusion. That's for sure not what they're doing. They know exactly what they want to get to in the end, so they're just answering up things which, like I said, they could have answered the same thing the other way and said that they're chayavot and other things, but they don't because they know what was nahuk. Okay.
They used that already for Limud Torah to say nechem.
Right. So leman yibui mechem v'mei b'nechem, why doesn't it say b'notechem? And the other thing is also, it's not so clear cut that leman yibui mechem is only referring to the last pasuk of the mezuzah. Who's to say that it's not talking about all the things that were mentioned in the paragraph before, which seems to be the obvious, right? That it's referring to everything mentioned. All of this, the Kabbalat, all mitzvot, will be ma'arich yamim, and not necessarily the last pasuk. That's another problem with it. Okay, so we're going to continue along on this, like I said, this, you know, somewhat arbitrary sugya, which is really, it's not so arbitrary, it's just that they know where they want to get to, and they're using this method to kind of get to their conclusions. Bahare sukkah, okay, so clearly that's a mitzvah taseh shazman grama. But notice they're going to say, why are nashim pturot from sukkah? Not because it fits into this klal, mitzvah taseh shazman grama, but because ta'ama dekata rachmana ha'ezrach lehotzi et hanashim. There's a specific drasha on the pasuk, which says, because it says, Kol ha'ezrach b'Yisrael will sit in the sukkah. Ha'ezrach excludes women. Halav hachi, so if you didn't have that drasha, it sounds like nashim would be chayavot. So how could you say they're p'turot because of mitzvah aseh shel mangram? It sounds like they're p'turot because we have a drasha. So Amar Abaye, itzrich. No, you need the drasha. Now we're going to see two answers. Rav and Abaye. They're each going to say why you needed the drasha, despite the fact that it was a mitzvah aseh shel mangram. You might have thought that they were chayavot for some other reason. Therefore comes the drasha to tell you, no, it really is a mitzvah aseh shel mangram that nashim are p'turot from. Again, this minimizes the mitzvah aseh shel mangram and nashim p'turot, because it's saying they're p'turot from a different reason, right? So why? You might have thought, because it says, basukot teshvu, teshvu ke'en taduru. What do we know, right? You're supposed to sit in the sukkah the way you live in general. Madira ish v'ishto, af sukkah ish v'ishto. Right? Just like people, man and wife, live together. So maybe in the sukkah, you should live the way you live normally with your wife. Rav Amar, so that's why you need the drasha to tell you. You might have thought they're chayavot, but they're not. And then Rava says a different reason. This is a very famous drasha. Because it says on the 15 of, you know, of Tishrei and the 15 of Nisan by Pesach, so they learn a lot of things from one to the other. So you might have thought, ma lahalan nashim chayavot, they're chayavot in the mitzvah of matzah, avka nashim chayavot, women would also be chayavot. Therefore, tzricha. So now they're going to ask another question. So ri'iyah is just like sukkah, where it's a mitzvah aseh shel mangram, and yet we have a special drasha to tell you, nashim p'turot. Why do you need a special drasha? B'tamad katav rachmana zichurcha. Lahotzi hanashim, right? It says, yira'ed kol zichurcha, and what do they say? Kol zichurcha means just the men, not the women. Halav hachi, it sounds like if you didn't have that drasha, nashim chayavot, right? Why would they be chayavot? It's a mitzvah aseh shel mangram, right? This is going for the regel, right? By the way, that wasn't listed. If you notice, that wasn't listed. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, some people don't have the nusach of tzitzit, which answers that question as to if tzitzit you could wear all day, why? So some people actually don't have tzitzit in the list. And obviously, ri'iyah is one that wasn't mentioned in the list, but is clear. Again, one of those ones of mitzvah aseh shel mangram. It's actually one of the examples when, again, we didn't get into all the details, but there's a whole sugya in Erevin about the people who, the women who accepted upon them certain mitzvot. There was Michal Bakushi who wore tefillin, and there was Ishto Shel Yona, there was Olah LaRegel for the Riyah. Okay, so it's definitely one of them up there, even though it didn't appear in that braita. So now they say, Itzrich, you needed it. Why? Why do you need the drasha? Salkadat hachamina nelef Riyah Riyah mehakel. Also by Hakel it says, what's the pasuk? It says, Bivo kol Yisrael le'ra'ot et p'nei Hashem Elokecha. That's when you're supposed to read the Torah for Hakel. So le'ra'ot also appears there, and it also appears by Ri'iyah. So what might you have thought? That just like you're chayav in Hakel, the women, they'd also be chayavot in Ri'iyah, in the regel. So therefore, you needed a special drasha. Okay, so now they're going to ask, Adi alfina mitfilin liptura. If we're going to learn from tefillin that nashim p'turot, why don't we say ne'elef misimcha lechiyuva? If we have another pasuk that tells us the women are chayavot in simcha, and you say, well, simcha is a mitzvah aseh shel mangram, and nashim are chayavot, so why don't we say this is bona av to all the cases, and nashim should be chayavot? Amar Abaye, here's, you're going to love this one. Isha ba'ala mesamcha. The woman herself is not chayevet in simcha. It's the husband's obligation to be mesameach the wife. Okay, remember, tell your husbands this for next week. They're obligated to make you happy. Okay? So maybe you should have them do all the cleaning for Pesach. So therefore, the mitzvah is not actually on the women. Okay, the mogar is not going to be so happy with this. They're going to say, well, almana ma'ika lememar. But wait, we talked about the almana. She's also chayevet in simcha. She obviously doesn't have a husband that's going to be doing the mitzvah for her. She's a widow. So what do you say about that? Bishruya etzlo. It's a woman, an almana, who lives in the house of some person who takes care of her. And he is commanded to do the mitzvah of simcha for her. So in the end, they're going to say basically, right, that the mitzvah is, which actually in that context makes a little bit of sense because it's the Yigir, Yatom, and Almanah, who are all people who we assume the community takes responsibility to care for them. So it's saying someone else is caring for a simcha. So in the end, they say that we're not going to learn it from simcha because simcha really nashim are not chayavot. In other words, yes, they're chayavot technically, but really someone else is supposed to do the mitzvah of simcha for them. V'neilach mihakel. So why don't we learn from hakel? Right, when nashim are chayavot, so let's say they're chayavot in all other mitzvah aseh shel mangram. So what do you say? Mishum to have a matzav ha'kel shnei ktuvim habayim ke'echad. V'chol shnei ktuvim habayim ke'echad ein melamdim. So now they're going to say, oh, because we have two mitzvot, aseh shazman grama, that women are chayavot, matzah and hakel. How do we know matzah? Because matzah says, in the same pasuk, you're not allowed to eat chametz, and you have to eat matzah. So they say, whoever can't eat chametz also has to eat matzah, and women obviously can't eat chametz. So therefore, the chayavot and matzah. So now they're going to say, therefore, we have matzah and hakel. We can't learn from either of them because they're each shnei ktuvim. And they come, right, they're come and teach the same thing, and therefore you can't learn from them. So then they say, well, if you're going to make that argument, we can take the argument the other way, which is, how can we learn from tefillin? Ihachi tefillin uri'iya nami shnei ktuvim habim kecha ve'em elamdim. You could say there's tefillin, there's ri'iyat p'nei, right, yera'et kol zechorcha. Both of them are mitzvot aseh shazman grama that neshim p'turot. The Torah is teaching you that, so we should say, shnei ktuvim habim kecha, you can't learn from them. So now they're going to say, no. Sricha, you need each one. Each one is coming for a unique purpose, in which case, okay, this is the klal, two psukim that come to teach the exact same thing you can't learn from, only if the only reason they're there is to say it's just these two. But if you have a different reason that one couldn't have been learned from the other, then you could say these two psukim can still be bona av and learn from them to other cases. So why do you need both those psukim? If you just had tefillin, you would have thought, okay, we can learn to all other cases, but not to ri'iyah, because ri'iyah has the same word as appears in hakel, and hakel neshim chayavon. So they're chayavon and ri'iyah. So therefore, you need a ri'iyah specifically. Ve'ikatav rachmana ri'iyah, ve'lo katav tefillin, hav amina akish tefillin lemezuzah. You might have thought that if you had ri'iyah, we want to be bona av to all other cases, maybe we can, but not to tefillin, because tefillin is right next to mezuzah, and therefore you might have thought they're chayavot, just like mezuzah. So now they're going to say, remember, what did they say? By the mitzvot, the nashim are chayavot, matzah and hakel, it's shnei ktuvim, and therefore you can't learn. By matzah, by ri'iyah and tefillin, it's not shnei ktuvim because each one was necessary. So now why don't we say the same thing by matzah and hakel, that they were each also necessary, and therefore maybe you could learn from them to other cases. So, ihachi matzah v'hakel nami tzriche. So now they say, well, lamai tzriche, what would you need them for? So now they're going to say, bishlam, I understand in one direction you could say it. I katav rachmana hakel, v'lo katav matzah. Now they say, you might have thought you could do the 15 hakesh the opposite way, right? That if you just had hakel and you didn't have matzah, what would you say? Maybe matzah, women are not chayavot because sukkah, and therefore you need a special pasuk to learn it by matzah. But, ela lichtin nichtav rachmana matzah below by hakel, right? But if you had written it just by matzah and you didn't write it by hakel, what would you say? You wouldn't be able to say, I wouldn't have learned hakel. You would have said it would be obvious that hakel can be learned out, that it would be chayavot. Why? Because ana amina tfalim chayavim, nashim lo kol shekein. You would say that if the taf are chayav, the yiladim, the kids are chayavim, obviously the women are going to be chayavot. Why would you say that obvious? First of all, you can make this argument both ways, right? You would say, maybe kids are chayav because eventually they're going to get to chiyuv mitzvah. But this is saying the opposite logic, which is women who are chayavot in many mitzvot, but not all of them, right? And kids who are not obligated in any mitzvah, so kids who are not obligated in any mitzvah are chayavim here, then kal v'chomer, women who already are part of some mitzvot, should also be part of hakel. And therefore, if you have matzah, you would have assumed hakel, and therefore, in the end, they say, therefore, it is shnei ktuvim. Okay? Hilkach, hava le shnei ktuvim habaim ke'echad ve'eim melamdim. Okay, so now we have our answer. Right now, until we question it. Okay, we're going to end with one more question. But where we're at now is, we have matzah and hakel, which we say are shnei ktuvim habayim ke'echad and ein melamdim, and that's why we don't learn the neshim v'chayavot in all mitzvot. We have tefillin and ri'iyah, which aren't shnei ktuvim, because each one was necessary. So therefore, we learn the neshim are pturot from there. But now they're going to say, that all works, ha'nicha l'man damar ein melamdim. Ela l'man damar melamdim, ma'ika l'meimar. But that's only if you say the shnei ktuvim kayim ve'en chad, ein melamdim. But some people say, no, two ketuvim abim kachad umelamdim. It's only three ketuvim emelamdim, and this is two, and two should be boneh av to everything else. So that's a question we're only going to answer tomorrow. They don't answer immediately. Vitu, and now they're going to say, and additionally, mitzvah asay shelo azman grama nashim chayavot minalan. Now they're just going to go off on another thing, which is, how do we know that mitzvah asay shanashim chayavot, shelo azman grama nashim chayavot, and they're going to say, we learn it from mora, from fear. Fear of your parents. Ma mora nashim chayavot, which is not time bound. Av kol mitzvah asay shelo azman grama nashim chayavot. Okay, so now they're going to say, we're going to learn it from Mora. They're going to start asking questions on this. They're going to continue, like, B'nei mi Talmud Torah. Okay, so now they're going to say, well, why don't we learn from Talmud Torah? That's also, in other words, they're taking examples. We're going to stop here and go on this tomorrow. Okay, we're going to finish up with this stuff tomorrow. Now, I just want to end with one thing, which is, years ago when I learned this, I always thought these Dapim were, in fact, when I taught in high school, there was one of the grades, they used to teach this whole section, these from Kaf Tet to Lamed Daled and get into women, mitzvot. And I always felt like I didn't want to teach this to high school kids because I felt like it was very random. The whole drasha thing was very, very random. But coming at it now with a different perspective, I think that the randomness is really trying to teach us something else, which is this klal, like I said before, this klal was not really meant to be a klal the way it was taken by the Gemara. And the Gemara is just trying to stress their conclusion. In other words, what do they want to show in the end? We know what the facts are, and these are the facts, and however we get to them, we're going to get to them. We're going to get to them through our rules and through our this. But in the end, it's really that they knew what they wanted to get to, and they used their logical methods to kind of show their conclusion. So as opposed to saying, this seems very random how they get to their conclusions, I don't think it's random that they get to their conclusions this way. I think it's the opposite. I think they knew exactly what they were trying to show. And for whatever reason, now I don't know what the reason is as to why these mitzvot women were part of and those mitzvot women weren't part of. I'm assuming that a lot of it just had to do with what was passed down and what became the nohag. And from that, they're taking it and putting it into their rules of, oh, well, we have rules of drashot, so let's darshan the way we, you know, to the conclusions we want to get to, which goes back to the whole question, which came first, the chicken or the egg, right? The halakha or the drasha? And in this case, it seems very clear to me that it was the halakha was there, and they used the world of drashot to get to their halachot. So it doesn't bother me as much as it used to bother me, you know, or I just look at it from a different perspective. It's not that, oh, this is so random, and how are they coming to these conclusions? It's really the opposite, which is it's not random at all. They had their motivation, and they're using this method, which was their method. That was how they thought. They do it for everything. So it was just a way of, right, in some cases, it's not everything, because in some cases they actually get to conclusions, but here it's a very blatant sugya where this is clear that they're using their world of drashot to kind of get to the conclusions that they want to reach. Yeah.
That approach were more accepted than what it did to rabbis, the rabbinim today. Mm-hmm. Outlets and ways to adapt halachot more appropriate to
what we do,
the way things are done.
Right, we do that. We do. In fact, this is a great sugya for that, because what happened? In the end, women started taking upon more mitzvot, right? So in the Middle Ages, women started doing, you know, some women were wearing tzitzit, and some women were wearing tefillin, and some women were going to the sukkah and making a bracha, you know, and the whole question was, can they make a bracha, can't they make a bracha? And the approach of the rabbis specifically matched what was going on. The Sephardi rabbis, who didn't have women wanting to do these things, just said, yeah, you don't do a bracha. They didn't relate to it very much. The Ashkenazim, who saw the women who had ratzon and they wanted to do things, so they took each thing le'inyano, you know, where they thought there were issues like gufnaki by tefillin, and they said, oh, maybe not. And tzitzit, it was beged ish. Yeah, there were things. First of all, tzitzit, there were people who wore it and it was okay, and there were people who they kind of stopped and said, you shouldn't be doing this. There were different approaches among different people, but a lot of it had to do with how they approached as they tried to fit it into. So when they came to saying a bracha, well, some said, well, they're not commanded. Some people changed the bracha. They said, well, I forget how they said it. There were different bracha, nusach. It wasn't they commanded us. I think they commanded Yisrael or Amo Yisrael, something like that. But Tziva Amo Yisrael to do this mitzvah. Some changed the bracha. Some said, no, we have to keep within, you know, and if they're going to do a mitzvah, well, then they're already commanded, so to speak, so they could say the bracha. So it was all a matter of, it's exactly, I think, what people do. They adapt it. And they adapt it using the klalim that they know. Like they tried to make examples. Like they took challah. Well, challah, we're not necessarily commanded, but yet we make a bracha. So look, we can use that as an example. They tried to use precedents, halachic precedents, to get to the conclusions that they wanted to reach, to allow the women. In fact, they even talk about it. If these women really want to do this, well, then obviously we should allow them to do it because there's a ratzon and they're doing it for the right reasons. And, you know, and then there's places where they, you know, in more modern days, let's say women's tefillah, where Moshe Feinstein was against it because he felt like they were coming with this feminist attitude and he didn't think that that was a good approach, you know, and they'll say, well, they have the wrong intentions. And then that's a good question. Did they have the right intentions? You know, who's to decide what their intentions are and what is or not? But that's always what goes on. Something comes out and then they have to view it through their prism of what they, you know, what other halachic precedent there is and what they view people's motivations and which, you know, sometimes is accurate, sometimes isn't. It's a good question. This is a sugya that lends itself to that whole debate and how you relate to it.